Okay, ladies, gentlemen, and other gentlemen, here you are in episode 6 of Off Color. This is a segmented look at EDH, trying to showcase the serious, the aggressive, and the awesome. Surprised I remembered all three of those. I am Chris, I like playing EDH, and I'm a butt. How about we introduce a couple of the other fellers here? Hey, Calvin, how about you say hi?
Hey, what's going on out there, listening audience? This is Calvin, also known as Captain Red Zone around the internet. You're listening to episode 6, so at this point, I really don't think I should tell you that I'm proud of you because, you know, you're my listeners, and I might give you a hard time sometimes, but you know what? Deep down inside, I really do hate you.
Man, you're like a bad girlfriend, Calvin.
Yeah.
And we just can't keep, we just can't get enough. We just keep coming back to the well.
We can make him better. We can change him.
The sex is just too damn good. We can't stop.
And we just never ever change me.
We just shame walk away afterwards. All right, so we've got Calvin on one hand, and on the other hand, equally good, we've got old Cassidy Silver. Say hi, boy.
Hello, everyone. This is Cassidy. I write over at TCG Player, so you can check out my articles on Thursday.
Except for this week.
Well, by the time this comes out, I'll probably have something out this week.
Sweet.
So, 2 weeks, what am I going to have? Oh, I'm sure I'm going to have, at this point, I'm sure I'm going to have updates to the Innistrad decks, because that's pretty much all there is to do with this set, is put more zombies and werewolves and vampires in the decks. So, I'm sure Olivia and Grimgrin will come back, and hopefully they'll put it on Wizards again, so I can feel cool. Besides that, I don't have much to plug. I think we should just get right into stuff. Let's get right into Chris's stupid card thing.
Yeah. Let's do that.
Well. If it isn't time for Chris's stupid card thing, here on Off Color.
Okay, you wonderful mans and womans, we're at my stupid card thing. This week I've got another black-red card. I swear to God, at some point I am going to expand upon my stupid cards, so we'll stop getting black and or red or black-red ones. But we're going to go with an enchantment, you know, those things that nobody ever seems to remove. And this one is Anthem of Rakdos. 2 colorless, 1 black, and 2 red. Kind of questioning that mana cost there. For an enchantment. Whenever a creature you control attacks, it gets +2/+0 until end of turn, and Anthem of Rakdos deals 1 damage to you. Since it's Rakdos, we also have a Hellbent ability. Hellbent. As long as you have no cards in hand, if a source you control would deal damage to a creature or player, it deals double that damage to that creature or player instead. One of the rulings that I should note to you, the Hellbent ability doubles the damage dealt to you by Anthem of Rakdos itself. So if one of your bros attacks when you're Hellbent, you get hit for 2. I will say that I love every single damage doubler in black and red. And I like this one because it allows me to have no cards in my hand. Calvin, what do you think of this bad boy?
Well, one of the main things I was going to point out was the fact that it does do the damage to you and it doubles it. And another thing that you might want to know about this horrible, horrible card is the fact that it does accumulate for each creature you use. So it basically gets worse the more dudes you have on the field. If you attack with 1 guy, it's going to hit you for 1. If you attack with 2 guys, the 2 guys are both going to get pumped, and it's going to hit you for 2, and so on and so forth. Ugh, God, man. When I was looking at this card, the first thing that came to my mind was, ugh. Really? Really? This is the one you want to pick, Christian? I was like, okay. Well, hey, it's your thing, so.
It doubles the damage.
Yeah, it's going to kill me before my dudes even hit the fucking battlefield.
Maybe don't attack with so many guys at once.
I can't help it.
It's true. You have a prescription. Well, I've seen it. So, Cassidy, what's your first thoughts on this wonderful card?
It's not the best card, but it is kind of fun. I think I would like to use it in something that's not going to have a lot of creatures anyways. I don't want to steal your thunder, Chris, because I'm sure you're going to mention this, but I think it would be great in a Karavak deck.
Thunder stolen!
Now you have to think of something else to say.
My thunder.
You know.
My goddamn thunder.
It's also good in decks that don't use creatures to attack necessarily. Then the plus two bonus isn't going to come into effect as much, even though you'll get like a little bit out of it with your general. But then at the same time, you can use it like to just double the damage that's going on, as another Furnace of Wrath kind of. So yeah, it is bad if you're playing with a lot of creatures and stuff, but, if you're doing like kind of like a not very many creatures, you know, even like a deck like, I built a Nicol Bolas deck that had no creatures in it besides Bolas. So something like that, you know, that would fit right into that deck. You could double damage that you intend to do, and you're only going to take two damage for Bolas attacking. And maybe if you bribery or steal the creatures or something.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I think actually you've slotted pretty well into Bolas. But of course it's in my Karavik deck, because, you know, black red, doubling damage, Karavik slinging that damage everywhere, you know, he usually survives 1.5 turns after my turn. But Calvin, I'm gonna paint a little picture here for you. What's your favorite black red beater?
My favorite beater in both black and red.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Oh wait, no, that wasn't the Oversoul isn't black red, but there isn't.
There is a black red. It's
that's the one that brings the guys back from the yard, though, so he's not as awesome.
Okay, so let's see then. Black red beater, favorite one that I actually prefer. Deathbringer Thoktar.
Okay, so you got your Deathbringer Thoktar out. Okay.
Ooh, that's amazing with Anthem. I love that. That's awesome.
Okay, so you got your boy Deathbringer Thoktar. You got Furnace of Wrath. You got Wound Reflection. You got this bad boy and no cards in hand, and an Inquisitor's Flail, and you swing. How good you feeling right about now?
Maybe nobody's trying to bring me around on this card. Okay.
Maybe even a Fire Shrieker to give it double strike too.
Oh yeah, a Fire Shrieker to give it double strike as well. You just see the stack explode. Actually, no, because the damage doublers don't go on the stack. It just happens. That's right. Dropping a little magic knowledge on you.
One of the other things I was thinking about was with Malfagar, that big badass demon. Because, you know, he comes into play and makes everyone discard their hands. So you have Hellbent right away. And then the fact that he's gigantic and dealing double damage on your Hellbent. And again, he's another guy that is going to be attacking probably by himself or without as many creatures. Mm-hmm. So I would like, not necessarily even in a Malfagor deck, but maybe even, you know, in a Grixis deck or some other deck, or Kalia even.
Yeah, actually, since Kalia brings it into play tapped and attacking, would it trigger the +2/+0 and deal you damage? I guess it would.
We'll
erase that bit.
Hold on a second. Let me look at this Anthem first.
Yeah, I think, he'd get the bonus, so he'd have to hurt you
too. So attacks. I don't think it would trigger the Anthem. Because, you'd have to, like, basically turn the creature sideways for it to recognize it, I think. For it to get the +2.
When you cheat attackers in, I can't remember.
No, yeah, that won't. It won't, give the +2/+0 bonus when it gets cheated in.
But it won't hurt you then either.
Well, you'll get Hellbent out of nowhere, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then you'll also, you know, you'll probably deal but cause a lot of sacrifices because of Malfagor's other ability, you know?
It's kind of strange that they printed such a Rakdos-specific guy like that in Conflux.
Oh, yeah. I always assumed that he was part of the Rakdos, but I guess that's...
No,
actually,
that's
Rakdos,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's Rakdos and Lizolda the Blood Witch.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, you know, they've always been planning for EDH, you know, for a while, so I'm sure they did that semi on purpose.
Yeah, I like messing around with Hellbent and EDH because I like, you know, making decisions can make your head hurt. So if you don't have any cards in hand, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, and red and black are pretty good at just dumping their hands, you know, so.
Yeah.
Okay, fine, you guys are going to make me do this. Let's see here. Okay, so we could easily combine this thing with Dredge Slug.
What?
Dredge Slug?
Oh, Dredge Slug. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a 9/9 trampler for 3 colorless, 1 black, and a red. It's a horror, and it has Dread Slug. It's -4 for each card in your hand. So if you have a card in your hand, basically he's a 5.
Okay. I think Dread Slag.
Yeah, it's slag, not slug, but yeah.
I'm sorry. My bad.
I was just gonna leave it on there because Dread Slug was making me laugh. So
well, I couldn't find it, and like, oh, okay, we're still leaving it. That's gonna be the name of the episode.
Dread Slug.
Dread Slug. But think of it like with this card, if you're gonna get Hellbent, at least with this card, you can have like a 9/9. You'll get the +2 from the Anthem, making him an 11/11 trampler.
Yeah, he's gonna be hitting for 22 damage.
There you go. That's another, that's another creature that can slot into this, this just few value creatures that'll get a lot of value out of the Anthem. That sounds really good.
Okay,
Let's see. Anything else I can think of to, I need cards now to give you an extra attack phase because I think that the Anthem, let me read this Anthem one more time before I open my mouth.
Savage Beating. That's my favorite one.
Of course you get dinged again.
Well, yeah, but.
Yeah, but you at least get a chance to like do twice as much damage to your opponent.
That's true.
And if you use the Savage Beating, the one with Entwine, for 7 total, you give him, Double Strike too. Which will stack with the Anthem, you know. So,
You just hit quad damage then.
Yeah. There you go.
Damage.
Try to hit that all the time with the Ruhan. That's why I love the Inquisitor's Flail, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Ruhan doesn't care about getting hit, the hit back from the flail.
Nah. He's big enough.
I don't think Ruhan really cares about anything.
Nope.
Yeah.
He just,
Ruhan isn't big on thinking.
He just smashes. That's what we do. Yes.
I thought you were the green guy, Cass.
I also like Ruhan. Ruhan Smash is one of my favorite decks.
Oh, you should see the picture that I posted up on the my last article with Zedru. He has like a picture of Ruhan and like a picture of like the Incredible Hulk standing in front of him saying he doesn't want none.
Ruhan's way tougher than the Incredible Hulk. Not even a contest. Purple Pants alone is gonna get you beat.
Depending on how much enchantment removal your meta runs, this card could get savagely worse. Especially if they wait for you to get Hellbent before they blow it up, and then you just cry.
Well, and it doubles damage to everyone, too. Right? Yeah, so it doubles damage to you, too, so.
Well, it's as long as it sources you control, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's not completely awful. Yeah, if it just doubled damage across the board, I don't know what... I'd probably still run it.
So it's actually a little bit better than Furnace of Wrath and stuff because that's more global, right? So, like, this deals a little bit of damage, but when there's a lot of players, this kind of limits the scope of the dealing double damage.
There's something to be said for being asymmetrical, eh?
Right, exactly, especially in a game, or rather in a format with so many multiplayer, you know, so many players, 5, 6 guys. Anyone else playing red and Furnace of Wrath could become more of a liability.
Ooh. You could use this with Ashling. Because, like, he could, like, get her, put some counters on her, and when you remove the counters, she'll, like, do damage to everybody and everything. But then this would see that and double it if you already held it. So you could take out, like, 6/6s with just, like, 3+1 counters.
Yeah. Red's biggest thing is you always want to be ahead on life. Then you're fine.
Well, yeah, and since this is going in a black deck, you can drain life. You know what I mean? And, you know, red and black both have a lot of good X spells, you know, a lot of spells that will get better with all black's ridiculous mana ramping, you know. So, yeah, I think that could be a really sweet deck right there, just draining life. And but that, I guess, drain life causes loss of life, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Have they reprinted one more recently that just does damage?
I don't think so. Like, I just want to be one life ahead of everybody and then just Earthquake.
Oh, actually, no, the...
Two life ahead.
Just make it 3 to make sure. Just fuck around, double it up, and next thing you know, poof. Whoops.
Actually, no. Modern Drain Life deals damage.
Oh, really?
And you gain damage equal to the or you gain life equal to the damage you dealt, but not more than that player's life, whatever.
That's true, yeah.
Drain Life kicks ass with with the Anthem. I love that.
That actually makes it, I mean, sure you're only hitting one guy, but as far as synergy with this card goes, it's better than Exsanguinate.
Yeah.
Except you're probably just winning the game. Have you ever cast an Exsanguinate and not won the game?
As a desperation move, you know, it's one of those one of those cards that's not totally douchey to do on the down, you know? Yeah, so that makes Drain Life pretty fun, actually. Let me check up Soulburn even, because I just love this card back in the day. Yeah, it's the same. Soulburn's the same thing, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you can spend red, too, even better.
So, I think this deck is actually pretty kind of sweet.
What about Lightning Reaper? It's a three colorless black and a red. It's a 3/3 zombie beast, has fear and haste, and whenever Lightning Reaver deals combat damage to a player, you put a charge counter on it. And at the end of your turn, Lightning Reaver deals damage equal to the number of charge counters on it to each opponent.
Oh, man. That's brutal.
So you can, like, plop it down, swing with it, you'll take 2 points. It'll be hellbent. Yeah, so you'll take 2 points, Reaver connect with somebody, and then, like, at the end of every turn, as long as the Anthem is out and the Reaver is out, all of your opponents are going to be taking 2 points of damage. Because Reaver's going to ping them, and then the Anthem's going to double it.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And then, if it can keep getting counters, man. Black-Red really got a big old shot in the ass from Alara. Though I guess almost every color combination did.
Yeah.
Alara didn't fuck around.
I'm kind of sad I didn't play a lot during that, because a lot of the cards that I really want now are from there, you know? I don't have any of the Alara generals really lying around in the real.
But if you want those Alara generals, all you gotta do is go buy yourself one of those from the vault commander thing.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, pretty much every legendary creature from fucking Alara is in there.
Well, yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I just don't want to buy that thing.
Yeah.
If someone gave it to me, that'd be really sweet.
I don't see that happening.
We have listeners. Listeners, get out there. Cassidy wants this.
Yeah, I mean,
don't do that.
Andy over on Commander Cast is way above taking stuff from listeners, but let me tell you, girl, I am totally not, so. just throwing that out there.
Sorry, I'm putting the kibosh on that. I'll give it away. I'll make it come through me, and then I'll give it away. I'll be like, hey, homeless dude, here you go.
Oh, okay. Since we're talking about homeless guys, I have a great story.
Oh, do you now?
Yes, I have this story you guys are going to be glad I told. So, my friends came over from Michigan, and they brought with these two exchange students. One was Chile, and one was from Peru, and they were both, like, really naive about everything. So we went to Giordano's downtown, and we were walking to the red line, and we came across a bum, and one of the foreign exchange students took her pizza, went back across the street, took her pizza to the bum, and offered it to him. And the bum looks at it and goes, I don't like deep dish pizza.
That's right. Even beggars can be choosy, ladies and gentlemen.
So it was just the reaction of these girls that, like,
maybe you shouldn't be bumming in Chicago then either.
Right? You don't like deep dish pizza. So sorry to break up the conversation, but that story is one of my
favorites. That's okay. I think we basically this card is just it's very swingy, hot, super high upside, but it can beat you in the ass too. Those are my favorite kind of cards. I like high risk, high reward. Actually, I even like high risk, low reward cards. So I can't really say too much. But let's go ahead and thumbs up or thumbs down, Cassidy.
I'm pretty thumbs up on this. I think we came up with, like, at least the bare bones of a deck that would be pretty fun to play, whether it's Karavak or Kali or whatever. You know, there's a lot you can do with this card. And I especially like it with the Lightning Reaver. That was a great, great idea. So, thumbs up.
Awesome. Okay, Calvin, are you staying with your thumbs down stance, or have we essentially brought you over to the other side?
Okay. Let's see. Am I going to go thumbs up or thumbs down on this thing? Okay, if you're the kind of person who really doesn't give a damn about your personal life total, and granted, like, yeah, an EDH that's 40, but still, that's a lot of damage to be taken per creature. Like, me personally, I love to attack with a lot of creatures. So I could not see myself using this. But, damn, if I was going to build a deck and it was going to be red and black, I could see myself thinking about it. And then probably, like, promptly turning around and be like, no, what the fuck was I thinking, and slap the shit out of myself.
I think once you get to physical harm, that still counts as a thumbs down.
Like, I already know for a fact, like, this thing would kill me more times than I actually would, like, care to think about. But, like, just the idea of being in a position where I could attack with, like, a bunch of dudes, and I can't, because if I do, I'm going to kill myself. Then all my dudes would be blocking. No, hell no. You know what? No, fuck that. Thumbs down.
Thumbs, man. Thumbs down from Calvin.
Just thinking about my dudes having to sit back and block because I played a card. I'm sorry.
Okay, so it looks like we're deadlocked at one thumbs up, and one thumb down. Kids at home, do you have an opinion on this card? By all means, hit us up at offcolorcast@gmail.com. We report, you decide.
Is that what we're going with?
What, the Fox News logo works for everything?
Oh, God. Like, literally, like, I have, like, a pain in my back right now just thinking about my creatures not being able to turn sideways, because if I do, I'm going to kill myself. Oh, God, no. I'd be in tears. Like, no, fuck this. I ain't playing this no more. I'm taking that back. I'm taking that card back. I'm playing a lion. Nobody saw that. Someone fucking mind controls me and makes me play the damn thing.
Mind slavers you and makes you play Anthem Arrakis.
Yeah, like, mind slavers me and makes me play it. I'm like, God damn it! No.
Now someone has to just donate it. Like, someone's playing Grixis deck, just donate Anthem Arrakis to Calvin every time.
Here's your anthem, sir.
Get that shit, like, oh, you bastard.
I didn't think of using it with Malfagor, though. I keep forgetting Malfagor exists. Mostly because the same thing. I mix up Malfagor and Rakdos all the time.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, as long as you give him haste, you're fine. And it's not like Red doesn't have any ways to do that.
Yeah, they have a lot of good ways, actually. So.
Close that fucking window. I don't want to get you no more.
It's beautiful.
The part that gets to me the most is, like, I'm sitting there trying to think, or like, okay, maybe we can make this work. But it's like at the last moment it hit me, like, wait a second, no, I can't make this work, because if I did, I wouldn't be able to fucking attack. Oh, God, the +2 bonus would be good, but damn it. Oh, I'd have to play it in, like, black, white, and red or something, just so I could try to gain enough life back so it doesn't fucking matter.
There you go.
Yeah, be good in Kelly then.
There we go.
I mean, if you want to pick up this card, it's 17 cents, lightly played.
No, I know I have one floating around here. I've seen it before. It's just like I've actually sat down and read and looked at it.
It taunts you.
Oh, God. Why the hell would they print that? Because they don't love it. Like, Wizards fucking hates me. That's what it is. You know what? There's a guy out there right now who's going to be turning creatures sideways. Let's fuck him over.
Ooh, this actually would work good with Breath of Malfagor, too. As long as it's your last card in hand. It just does 5 damage to each opponent. It's a 5 mana instant that does 5 damage to each opponent.
Oh, that's badass. It's like a lava axe to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Uber axe.
What do you think when you're sitting at a group with people maybe you don't know too well and somebody casts a lava axe in a 4-player EDH game?
That guy's got balls. That's all I would say.
He's either got balls or he's like, you just feel bad for him. It's like, no, man. No. Put the lava axe away, buddy. I have it in a deck, you know, but I haven't been able to cast it yet. Well, it's still lava axe. I run it in Lizolda, so I'm usually just discarding the lava axe. I don't even care to bring it back.
if I was sitting at a table and I saw someone cast a lava axe, I'd probably, like, look at them sideways and just kind of wonder, like, okay, how are you going to use this? You gotta look around the table, like, is there, like, a Chandra's Firebrand out here that's going to double this or something?
Nope, just five damage.
Five damage once.
Isn't even going to recur it. Could you imagine recurring a lava axe? That
Charm Breaker Devils all the way.
Charm Breaker Axe, the new combo.
Charm Breaker Axe. Strangely enough, I actually kind of like the idea of that. Like, you know, like just a lot. One lava axe sucks. Like, if you're playing like EDH and you're just going to cast it once, yeah, you're like, you're doing it wrong. But if you've got like a Charm Breaker Devil out there that's going to keep bringing that bad boy back and you get a chance to use it again and again and again, but like, you know what? Yeah. Now you've got some respect.
I feel like I'd rather just give me Bolt back. Actually, no, I'd rather give me Shock. I'd be fine casting Shock
over and over. I like Breath of Malkvogor, though. That card's pretty good. I could see doing that over and over again in EDH.
Yeah, but Lava Axe has like one of the best flavor texts out there. Catch.
And now it's time for Cassidy's Audacity. He doesn't follow the rules. Off color.
So this week on Cassidy's Audacity, we're going to talk about mulliganing. Now, it's not necessarily against the rules, but it is beyond the rules. And in my experience playing against a lot of different people, like at events or even just, you know, around, everyone kind of has a different idea of what a mulligan is. And then the weird thing is they ask you how you do your mulligan, and you just kind of like, you just have to stop and think of how to explain it, you know? At least that's my experience. I always end up just saying, just keep going till you get a good hand, you know? And that's kind of how we play it around locally, you know, and that's how I play with my brothers and stuff. But then, you know, I say something like that, and then they keep mulliganing until they have a hand that's going to beat me, like, on turn three. So, you know, I'm not really sure what to say, but what I've been saying obviously isn't working. So I guess I'll just start by asking you guys how you feel about mulliganing. Christian, how do you handle mulliganing when you play Magic?
I pretty much do it the same way. I do free seven as many times as you want. And, you know, sometimes it'll probably get taken advantage of, but the people I'm playing with usually, it's not going to matter because, I mean, I really just want everyone to have a hand where we can all play the game. Giving everybody a free seven every time, because I don't, like, some people will mess with, like, partial Paris, and admittedly, sometimes my brain doesn't even remember what a partial Paris mulligan is. I like free seven every time much more than I do a Paris mulligan. Just because I don't like people keeping some of the cards and then just grabbing more. A, it reduces your chances of getting, you know, a decent hand from the stuff that you could get, and B, you're being a dick. But, yeah, I do free 7, free 7, free 7. Online, though, I think you go straight to 6. Actually, no, my bad. You get one free 7, and then you go to 6.
Oh, okay.
Mauling to 6 or 5 in a commander game just feels so horrible.
So that's, yeah, because I guess with Moto, I'm sorry, it's not called Moto anymore, is it? MTGO.
Yeah, cool kids still call it Moto.
You know, it's like that all has to be built into the system, right? So,
yeah.
I guess that's the closest thing we really have to like a set rules. Although there are rules on the official Commander page as well, and I think they kind of, you know, they're kind of wishy-washy about the rules anyways, but, I never really liked the partial Paris, like you mentioned, Christian. What about you, Kevin? What's your mulligan style?
Well, my personal mulligan style, it pretty much depends on the play group I'm with. Like, usually when I'm out playing with, like, people, like, at stores and around, like, random places like that, we go by the partial Paris, which, for those out there that don't know, pretty much you draw your initial seven. And if there's something there that, you know, you don't want to keep that hand, you select whatever card you want to keep, put them to the side. The cards you don't want, you put them on the bottom and draw that many more cards off the top. After you draw that many cards off the top, you basically have your opening hand, and then you just shuffle your library when you're done. you get a free one with the first one. So it's like if you have the initial seven, you can take like three down, draw three, and you're back to seven. After the initial seven, you have to start taking one off for each additional mulligan after that. So we're like six, five, four, and down to wherever. And most of the time when I'm out actually playing with like groups of people that I don't really know too well around the area, that's basically the way that we do it where I'm at. And only time that I actually go with like the just draw seven is when I'm like around like close friends, like my brother and like other people that I hang out with. Like if we're just like hanging around at home, or if we happen to be out to the shop and it's just like the three or four of us. Because we already know kind of like how everybody is going to be playing anyway, so we actually know none of us are going to win on turn one. So we can all feel kind of comfortable doing the initial seven, just the repeat seven.
So what would you call the pre-seven over and over again? Like, what would be the best way to describe that to someone else?
Well, with us, the way we usually do the pre-seven is basically you could, it depends on the person in our group. Like, for instance, we like try to partial Paris. Like, you know, start off, cards in hand, select, don't like them. Some people like just do the partial Paris thing just with like infinite free mulligans. But then there's certain people like my brother, we could like draw like the initial seven, be a little upset that he didn't get it, try to partial. Didn't get it and just say the hell with it and just shuffle the whole damn thing back up into piles and then just start over from scratch to just go for a fresh all new seven.
I think I would call the free sevens over and over. I think I'd call it the Care Bear Mulligan.
Care Bear Mulligan?
I think that's a good name for it. If I were playing with people I didn't know and they asked me how I mulliganed, I would probably go with my standard casual, like when I'm playing casual decks with someone, is that free seven and then, you know, six, five, four.
Yeah,
if I was playing with people I didn't know, I'd probably tell them that was how we mulliganed.
Yeah, that's probably the best way to do it, because, like we've kind of talked about, people can take advantage of it, and like for a lot of people that play Magic, like, taking advantage of the rules is just part of Magic, you know?
Well, those guys are assholes.
Right, exactly, but, you know, you never know who you're going to sit down and play a game with, you know? So it's probably the best way to nip the asshole thing in the bud is to have it kind of like you said, you know, free seven and then kind of Paris down, so...
And don't I know about nipping asshole?
I'm sure you do.
Let's talk about your Almanath deck. What kind of hands will you keep and what kind of hands will you ship, since it's the deck you know the most about?
Okay, fair enough. Basically, with Almanath, I'll definitely want to have at least two land and then some sort of fixing, like a Secure Tribe Elder when I'm running it, Ruffalos, something like that. So I just to make sure that I can get to three mana and at least play Omnath. I usually don't really try too hard to mulligan past that, you know? Even when it comes to sanctioned tournaments, I usually keep hands where I have land. I don't know, maybe I'm just a noob that way. But definitely in EDH, as long as I have the mana to play, especially with Omnath, I'll keep whatever. And that's kind of why I do the free sevens, because I usually don't, you know what I mean? Like, the only time I ever have to keep shuffling is when I keep getting total garbage hands with my land base and stuff. What about you, Calvin? Like, what kind of hand do you usually mulligan? Do you mulligan pretty hard when it comes to what cards you want, or is it just a land thing, or?
Well, me, usually whenever I try to, like, you know, build my decks and stuff like that, I try to make sure that I have a decent amount of, like, land and mana fixers and stuff like that built in. So this way, even if I have an opening hand with just one land in it, I can usually attempt to try it. But whenever I do decide to mulligan, it's usually because I want actually, like, you know, usually I do it because I want more mana. If I have an opening hand that actually has, like, say, like, three lands, maybe two, and maybe a fixer, I'm usually set there. Because, you know, I already know that my particular decks that I usually have in the real are already going to have enough mana fixers that I'll eventually draw into to correct everything that I might have messed up on if I didn't mulligan.
Okay, so kind of the general consensus then there is, you know, for at least me and Calvin, we like to mulligan to have like a comfortable mana base to start out and just play the game. Do you ever really look for specific cards for your decks to look for mulligan or is that, because, like, to me, looking for specific cards through my mulligan, that seems kind of, like, almost cheating to me.
Me? Usually if I'm looking for anything specific, it's not because I'm looking for, like, a combo piece. It's more like the I prefer to have, like, something to play by turn X, depending on what deck it is. Say, for instance, like, if I'm playing blue-green with, like, my experimental Crotch, I try to make sure that I have at least something that Crotch has an ability that Crotch could actually be able to put a counter on and be able to copy. Not that it has to be anything particular, like, you know, something to draw or anything special. At least it's, like, you know, something like if it ever gets to a point where I actually just keep drawing land for, like, the next couple of turns and I just cast this in Crotch, Crotch is actually using something other than just other people's stuff. But if I'm just playing, like, an aggressive deck and I'm playing, like, just to, you know, just get, like, really, like, into people's faces with, like, something like red or green, I'm mulligan until I just have, like, a decent-sized creature that I actually could feel comfortable being able to cast with the hand that I originally had. But other than that, like, you know, after that, I just kind of, like, you know, just go for the mana.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. Definitely with some decks, I'll want to make sure I have some action, and that makes sense. You know, that makes sense in a lot of ways, too. So, you know, Christian, you kind of had the question about it. What's your personal mulligan style? Like, have you been doing up to this point anyways?
Well, in the real, I hate shuffling 100-card decks. So sometimes I'll keep a hand because I don't feel like shuffling. But as far as things, like, there are pieces that I'll look for that will make me keep a hand with less lands. Usually that piece is Armillary Sphere, because, you know, I'll slow the hell down. But if I have the mana to at least cast Armillary Sphere, I'll still be okay. But then sometimes, like, there's definitely times where you'll need action, because I've boned myself by keeping, like, 4 lands and 3/7 drops and just never getting there.
No. You're doing that's not right.
That's wrong. Or 3 lands, extra planar lands, and 2 X cards. Who cares? They don't matter. Because I never make it to extra planar lens mana.
And then you do play extra planar lens, get rid of the one of the 3 lands, and then someone shatters it, and you're like, ugh.
I was running through a phase where I was putting extra planar lens, Caged Sun, and Gauntlet of Power in 3 color decks. Because I'm like, you know, the double mana is going to help me out. It'll be fixing almost. Yeah, and then I'm just like, no, I got to stop doing this. This isn't working in 3 color decks for me.
Caged Sun kind of works in black decks because of Orborg and stuff, but that's about it.
Those cards that you mentioned, I've found them to basically be, like, monocolored decks and maybe a dual-color deck, depending on how heavy you're leaning on your second color.
I'm actually kind of down on Lens lately, just because I feel like I keep getting blown out every time I cast it.
Yeah, I don't play with Lens anymore either. I did for a while. It's kind of fun with snow-covered lands, because then there's not really much of a chance it'll ever be symmetrical. But, like, it just seems like I'd rather wait to turn 5 to play the gauntlets, because it's way safer, you know?
Yeah, I do like any of the mana doublers, though, to go off on a tangent. I like them if I can also help out the other person that's having a hard time. Like, I love being able to call red on any mana doubler. Because red's usually pretty innocuous, because the good people are usually not running it, unless they're in Grixis.
Yeah, but they also get Gauntlet of Might, too, yeah. So... You know.
Man, that's cash money. Well, that's true. Is there a gold border gauntlet of white?
No, not quite, unfortunately.
Max. But yeah, I'm just generally bad at mulliganing. That's basically what I've learned when I play. I think the best way for me to counteract that is to have a low casting cost general, so that at least I have some sort of action. I've been a huge fan of Marika Re-Beret, or however you want to say it, the Alliance's steel shit general. Just because she's 3 mana. I mean, it's Esper, but it's 3 mana, so at least I have something to do if I start bubbling around with my crap hand.
Yeah, I generally like low casting cost generals anyways, you know? Especially for that reason, because at least you want to be able to play your general. Like I said, not in Omnath, if I have nothing else to do, if I can play at least play Omnath, like, that means I can maybe have something to do. I usually don't like to play him third turn, but I mean, if that's the only thing I can do, fine. You know?
Yeah, why don't you tell the kids at home where they can tell us how they can, where they can tell us how that we are dumb and how we should actually mulligan.
Yes, and I'll try to word it better, but I probably won't.
Yeah, I fell on that one pretty good.
So, So I think that's pretty much wraps up our discussion on mulliganing. We've kind of discussed what we would tell other people with mulliganing, you know, in different situations, and then also what kind of hands we would mulligan. You know, if anyone else had any other input, definitely email us at offcolorcast@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on the website, offcolorcast.com.
Man, that's like the dead zone right now.
Yeah, it's actually really hard to leave messages on Blogspot, so
yeah,
I'm not surprised.
It's okay.
Yeah, but email. Also, you can tweet at any of us. I'm sure we'll have that information in the show notes. It's not very hard to send those and share those little things. So, you know, we're all pretty social media accessible. So if you want to get at us and tell us what you think about mulliganing, because I think we need more information from other people.
What's wrong with this photo?
Is that your wife?
No.
Oh. I'm a lot less interested all of a sudden.
Talking to his dick.
Hey, come on, dude. What's wrong with this photo?
No nipple on the right boob. It's kind of hard to tell. Or left boob, I mean.
No nipple on either boob.
Ah!
Yeah. It's kind of hard to tell on the other one.
Maybe tan your tits, too, while you're at it.
Yeah, I noticed a friend of mine sent me this, and it was like, this is a photo you could actually be able to post up on like places like Facebook and stuff, because since it doesn't have nipples, it's considered like...
I'm pretty sure. I feel like I see a hint of areola on the right, but that might just be the quality of the picture.
Yeah, that one's hard to tell.
Wait, so is she white?
I have no clue. But like, I saw it, I was like, you know what, I'm keeping that photo.
The breast skin makes me think she's white. Somewhere under there.
Yeah, probably tan bed and stuff.
I, you should probably change that picture, or else I'm going to be jacking off here pretty soon. I can just look at the photograph picture. It's a pretty big boner killer. Thanks, Durfington.
Like, Durfington, stop looking at my boobs.
It's the hardest beat. This is the hardest beat anybody's ever heard. It's made out of gunshots. Gunshots on a beat. What you ever hear harder than that?
Okay, everybody, this is Calvin coming at you once more, and yes, now we're going right back into the red zone. This week, we decided that we're going to bring you a little bit more of the Crave session from last week, because there's a few people out here who might actually want to know a little bit more in-depth information about how this is supposed to work. So today, we're going to go into R for Recon. Simply put, because going into C for creature just seems kind of dumb. I mean, in all honesty, really, do you really do need me to tell you that you have a creature on the field? Come on.
Well,
come on.
I mean, we talked to you on episode 1 about creatures.
Yeah, that's right, see? So come on, listeners, I know you're out there, and I know you're listening. I know you want to go back and listen to episode 1. Give us some hits on that. And, you know, come back. You can pause. We'll wait. All right, you back? All right, good. So, now that you're done with the whole creature part of this, we're going to go into R. R basically is recon, or basically taking a moment before you make any major decisions about what's actually going to happen and looking at, see what's going to happen on the board. One of the best things about the recon part of Crave is that you actually have a chance to do this before C. Yeah, that's right. I mean, granted, yes, alphabetically and numerically and whatever the case may be, it may be out of order, but still. You could actually do this on other people's turns. Why? Because sometimes the board doesn't change by the time it comes back to you. You get a chance to look around and make decisions about the stuff that's actually out on the field and get a chance to maybe contemplate about what you might actually want to do next. One of the best things you can do in this particular situation is look around. Take a quick look and see if there's any like weird artifacts or enchantments that's out there that might be of interest. Something that may happen to stop you. This gives you a good chance to actually look at the previous players and any creatures they may have played in. So, first, we're going to go into establishing board presence. Seeing as how we're looking at the different creatures that's out on the board, you want to ask yourself a few things. One, what kind of creature does your opponent actually have out? Is that the kind of creature that he's going to want to block with? Really? If he has a Merfolk looter out, I'm pretty sure he could block with it, but chances are he's going to use it to loot. So just because he has a creature doesn't mean that you won't be able to get into there for a few points of damage. Two, does your opponent actually have a creature that actually might be able to block and put up a decent defense, like a wall of some kind? Then yes, you may actually want to think about attacking that particular play with multiple creatures. If you've only got one, then, you know, maybe it's time to redirect your damage somewhere else. Three, if you happen to looking around and you happen to have an opponent has a creature that's way bigger than yours, and you're afraid that your creature is the most valuable thing that you have at the moment because your life points are low, is it worth risking sending that creature out there to that poor dead zone in the middle of the battlefield just to try to squeeze in, like, a few extra points? If your creature has some other additional abilities that could potentially guarantee that you're going to get damage in, then you know what? Maybe it might be worth it. But, hey, we're still in the deciding factors here. So, I'm going to hand this off over to the guys real quick. Cassidy, is there any particular situation you've been in recently where you've actually been able to look around and see that your board presence might be a little bit diminished according to the other creatures around?
Yeah, when it comes to the recon, you know, I'm not much on attacking all the time, so the situation would have to be super beneficial for me to really, like, commit to attacking, especially if there's someone that's open, or if someone, like you said, has just, like, merfolk looters or something where I want to, like, kind of goad them into blocking, you know? You know, whether they block or take damage, either way, I'm happy. So that's, like, that's the kind of recon I'd usually do during other people's turns. Also, you know, checking what kind of cards they've already played, you know, cards in hand, too. So, if, you know, if someone just Doombladed a creature during someone else's turn, you have a higher chance that that person's not going to Doomblade your creature as well. I'm sure I'll talk more about that kind of thing in a bit, but why don't we pass it off to Christian to kind of go over his initial reactions on recon.
I admit, when I'm looking over the board, the thing I'm looking for most is any board state where it's going to hurt me to attack. Even though one of my favorite cards hurts me when I attack. That doesn't matter. But, like, there's usually... I'll look for, like... I always want to make sure that somebody's not holding on to, like, a propaganda effect or something where I've just been my precious mana just to send a dude in or something like that. If I'm really thinking, like, if I haven't zoned out, if it's less than half an hour into the game, I guess, I'll try and check cards in hand and open mana, too, and try and think of what combat tricks in those colors I'd be afraid of, or just, like, what blowing my stuff up is going to happen, is going to do to me if I mess it up, and then I'll probably just still attack anyway. But then as the game drags on, I'm just like, glory, and then just go in, which isn't very good recon at all.
Just moving right on to the A and create the attack phase.
The A is artillery.
Oh.
Oh, man. Somebody wasn't studying for their Crave exam.
I never study for exams, man.
And that's why you're on this show.
It's all right. One of the main things that I've actually come to realize... Man. Granted, like, yeah, determining when to actually attack when this creature's actually on the board can be kind of daunting. I mean, you know, hey, anytime that there's another dude on the board, there's always a chance that your opponent is going to have something in their hand or some other type of battle effect, some type of bounce effect, some type of instant kill spell, or whatever the case may be. So I usually try to do what I can to pay attention to the amount of cards in the opponent's hands. Mainly because... when you're in a multiplayer setting like this, like Commander or 4-player or anything that involves you actually dueling against other people and not just one, there's the number of times that they're going to be able to kill your particular creature is going to go up. Pretty much you're going to have to look at the board and look at the player's hands and say, okay, how many cards does the blue player have? In my mind, in EDH, I've come to realize that the blue player usually has more counter spells in their hand. So if I'm trying to decide if I'm going to attack, I don't waste time thinking about the other effects they might have, like their various bounce spells. While granted, bounce is a pretty good use for certain things, in EDH it's kind of, in my area, not really used nearly as much. Unless, of course, it's attached to like a repeatable effect, like it's Prime Scepter or something. When it comes to the other colors, they all have their various things, and the only ones that I really worry about are people who have open black or open white, because that usually leads to Doomblades or Path to Exiles. one of the other things I've come to realize is that you can't really waste time trying to contemplate what they may have in their hand, because a lot of times you end up missing out on attacks and potential damage that could be done. In this format, there is 120 life points that don't belong to you, that you want gone. Trust me, the last thing you want to do is sit around with a creature who's not turning sideways, because that just makes the game go longer, and then somebody else out there is going to end up snatching the game from you. Another part for recon that I'm going to probably go along with is the discussion of other permanents that's on the field, like enchantments and various forms of artifacts that could potentially cause kind of issues for you. Propaganda effects are usually a real pain in the ass to deal with when you're the person who's trying to attack, until you hit the late game and you can actually afford to pay the mana for it. So if you happen to see a player out there who has a propaganda out, one of the other things I think of is there any other player on the field with enough mana and creatures that could potentially attack that person? Now, if there is somebody out there who could potentially go after the guy with the propaganda, this is the perfect time during a game to start doing politics. This is the best time to look at it and be like, hey, I want that guy dead, and I need your help because I can't do it. I will not attack you for X period of turns if you hit him for me. Now, granted, this may seem kind of like, you know, just blatantly trying to bribe somebody else into doing your work for you. But listen, you ain't going to be able to get all 120 points by yourself. I mean, you know, unless, of course, you happen to be playing something that involves, like, Ashling or maybe Urel. So, Cassidy, is there any particular ways you usually try to get around these field-blocking enchantments?
Mostly I just pack removal for it. In the case of a propaganda, I wouldn't be too concerned, because I'm probably going to only be attacking it, like I said, if I have a big advantage, and it'll probably be with only a few creatures. I do play a few, like, token decks and stuff like that, and that would be really frustrating, but those are usually green and white, and something like Aura Shards in a token deck makes pretty much any enchantment, you know, meaningless, you know? So you can get an Aura Shards thing going with, like, a Gov deck or a Riss, you know, I know you play Riss the Redeemed, Calvin. So,
yes,
right. So, I mean, so a deck like that can get around a propaganda pretty easily, I think. There was actually another kind of form of reconnaissance I wanted to talk about, and that was more of an active reconnaissance, using cards like, Gitaxian Probe, for instance.
You mean like telepathy?
Telepathy is a perfect idea. that gets obnoxious when there's all those hands on the table all the time, because it's confusing on what's in play and what's not in play. But, there's another form too, like, I like to call it kind of like an indirect kind of testing. You know, we're talking about, things like you mentioned, black and white being open for removal. A good way is to kind of like play cards. Like, for instance, an Oracle Moldiah is something that you can play before the attack phase, that people will probably want to kill right away. You know, something else that's going to have an effect right away that doesn't happen when it comes into play might draw out removal before you go into the attack phase, you know? So, something like that, I think, would really help.
So, Christian, is there any particular way you usually try to get around these particular troublesome enchantments?
It's horrible, but if someone's playing like a propaganda, they're getting exactly what they want out of it from me. I'll usually attack somebody else.
But do you ever take the time to try to see if you can convince someone who could attack them into attacking them?
Oh, yeah. Like, if I'm with people, I'll just be like, hey, man, why don't you attack that guy? Well, I might say it a bit better than that. Probably not, though.
Yeah, saying it like that probably isn't going to get the wanted effect.
Isn't it cool, though, like, as a dude, you're way more allowed to be political in an EDH game than if you were a lady, because then the people just say you're being a whore?
Yeah, we're completely not sexist on this show whatsoever.
Well, no, I mean, it's kind of not fair. Like, but, you know, because I don't have feminine wiles.
Yeah, but the reason I don't think I've ever actually, yes, I have. I've played one EDH game with a female, and the only times that I never attacked her is when she kept asking me, why do I keep attacking her?
I think you got some issues you need to work out there, Calvin.
But the thing is, like, you know, usually whenever I'm playing into a game, it's like I try to do what I can to attack who I think is the best person to attack first. If someone happens to, if I look around the board and I see someone's like screwed on mana and they're going to be like slowly dirtling around for like whatever turns, I usually try to leave them alone because I want people to actually still be able to play the game, even though I know I'm going to be swinging at him eventually. But at the moment, he's like no real major threat, and I don't want to be the guy that knocks him completely out. So I usually direct my damage other places unless, of course, he happens to be the only person that I can attack. And then it's like, well, hey, I understand that you're kind of screwed on mana, but in the same token, you know, maybe you should just build your deck better.
No, I get it. Lead singer, Prodigy, Calvin Russell. Smack my bitch up. That's what you're doing. That's what you do every day. I get it. Fuck, what was I talking about? I will say, my favorite way to find out if somebody has, like, a removal spell or something is to, you know, send my cannon fodder guys in.
With, like, your tokens and stuff?
Yeah. Or, you know, is cannon fodder's a card, right?
It's fodder cannon, actually.
Fodder cannon. Fodder cannon has some of my favorite flavor text, too. Step one, find your cousin. Get your cousin in the cannon. Find another cousin. Okay. For some strange reason, I thought cannon fodder made goblin tokens.
Huh. No.
It must be. My brain kind of shorted out there. But yeah, I've definitely left guys back and attacked with stupid cards just to see what they're packing. And then they're usually not packing, and I've made the bad decision. But, you know, it's a casual game. What am I going to do? Get my abacus out and start figuring out game states and damage ratios and all that? Psh, I'll leave that for you Melvins over there. I'm just going to turn dudes and attack with dudes. And then get yelled at for playing stupid. So, any more next level recon you guys got for us?
Well, the only thing I can actually say at this particular point is that when you're doing recon, it's good to be able to do it throughout the player's turns, but you have to remember that a lot of times that the game state will change by the time it actually gets back to you. People are going to play cards. And if it's at a point in the game where people aren't playing cards, then you've actually waited, in my personal opinion, too long to attack. Because now it's like the game is like slowed down and you could have easily gained a whole bunch of extra damage points on attacking other people because apparently they don't have anything because they're not playing anything. One of the other things I would like to actually add on to this is that, yes, politics do play really heavily into this particular format. It's kind of difficult to actually deal with. If you're not the political type person who doesn't like to talk to people, then it's kind of, this is probably one of the worst formats for you because,
unless you're playing a combo deck.
Yeah, unless you're playing something like that. But, don't be too... you know, like, shy or proud of yourself or your deck to, you know, ask other players for an additional assistance if needed. Be perfectly fine with calling other people up and being like, hey, I understand that you have a, whatchamacallit out, like, say you have a primeval titan out. Why do we keep going back to that fucking card? You know what? I'm not even going to say primeval titan. I understand you have a giant warthog hog out.
Well, you killed all of them. We know you don't have one of those.
Yeah, I still actually have, like, four. Like, right after that episode, I went back and looked through and found four more. I haven't done anything to them yet. Maybe later. But, like, you look at an opponent who has, like, a 6-6 giant warthog guy, let him know. Like, look, if you attack him, I will do X, Y, or Z. Or, you know, be willing to, like, throw out options out there. Because a lot of players are afraid to attack because they think that they're going to be the ones killed. But if you can convince them to do attacking for you, then the games can go a lot quicker than like an hour-long match. And sooner that this match is over with, the sooner you guys get to play another one. For all you players out there who are actually listening to this and attempting to take some of the advice I'm giving out, just remember, one, keep an eye on the board. Granted, it will change, but you will be able to come up with something by the time your turn comes around. And if the board doesn't look too, you know, pleasing for you, like everybody has something that you're afraid of doing, then, you know, maybe this isn't the turn for you to attack. Two, while you're keeping an eye out, make sure that you have the people at your table understand that you're not the only person with creatures that are able to turn sideways and go out there and attack. Let them know, like, you know, for every creature that's on the board, it's there because there's another creature that's on the board that it could have killed or traded with. The less creatures on the board in this particular case is kind of better for all of you because that means more people are open for actual attacks. And three, sometimes you just aren't going to be able to attack. You just have to accept it. You just have to live with it. I do. I don't like it, but hey, those situations comes up.
Pretty sure I'm just going to run Time Elemental as my only creature from now on, so I don't have to worry about attacking.
He's going to run creatures that have like zero attack points.
Time Elemental, Jesus Christ.
I love that Time Elemental.
So long.
I think I have a white-bordered one, though.
Oh, yeah, Legends, I gotcha. Let's see. Can't even remember what it does. It's like one of those wall of text cards that I just stopped reading halfway through.
Whenever it attacks or blocks at the end of the combat stage, it sacrifices itself unless it deals unless you let it deal 5 damage to you.
Oh, no, you sack it and it deals 5 damage to you.
Oh, damn, really?
This card's like your anathema. And you can pay 4 mana and tap it to bounce a permanent that isn't enchanted to its owner's hand.
Hey, that card's actually pretty good.
Yeah.
Huh.
I like it. Which version do I have?
So wait a second. You're telling me this is a creature with no attack, but it says when this thing attacks.
Just in case.
Also when it blocks, though, too, so.
Yeah. So you can't block with it, the sweet Ho-2 that it is.
Oh, yeah, this is... now I'm looking at it. This is back when it had cards that looked like they had flying, but they didn't.
Yeah.
Like, you would think that in that brick of text that's underneath this card, the word flying would appear somewhere once. No.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm glad. It doesn't matter. You wouldn't want to block.
No. It would hurt to block.
Yeah.
Okay, so back in episode 1, if you recall, we did some nice talking about tag team generals. That was episode 1, right?
Yes.
Awesome. And so we've come back at you to the face, and we're going to expand a little bit on that, talk about it a little bit more. Our boy Calvin here has been laboriously testing them in his lab. Yeah, that's it. His lab. And so how about you bring your findings to us, Calvin?
Okay.
Do you want to be Professor Calvin for this?
I'm good. Well, while sitting around, playing around with some of the various EDH decks that I've been building up, I've been slipping in extra generals to be able to use secondary commanders. So I could be able to tag them in and out if needed. Pretty much they're still like kind of mono generals, like regular EDH decks, but they also have second option generals that can come in. That way, whenever I get a chance to, I can actually try the tag team format out. One of the things that I've recently come across that kind of eked a little bit of a hole into me was trying to figure out what the hell to do when someone steals one of your commanders. Initially, we were talking about how you couldn't have your two commanders out at the same time. And if one did come in, the other one would have to, like, basically tag himself out and go back to the command zone. But say you happen to have your Ashling the Pilgrim out. Someone mind controls it and takes it from you. I was wondering, should I be able to put my id in now? And in the back of my mind, I was thinking some weird interactions might actually occur if I actually did this. So I decided to bring it up here and attempt to see if I could maybe get the guys here to help me figure out like a proper way to handle this particular situation. In my mind, the way I'm thinking of it is that if I were to bring Iv in, technically Ashling should bounce back to the command zone. But then the main issue is that she's not on my side of the field. So should Iv stay if something happens to the mind control and Ashling comes back? Does Iv bounce away and Ashling, or does Ashling bounce away? I had a whole bunch of various issues with this, And I figured maybe Cassidy and Christian here could help me figure some of this stuff out. So, Cassidy, what do you actually think would be, like, an easy way to resolve this particular issue?
The best way to do it, I think, would just be to hands down, just make it so that any kind of zone change for a commander from either command zone or, like, the owner's zone would make it so that you can just opt to put it back into the command zone and put, like, more commander attacks on it. So, for instance, if someone does try to mind control or, you know, control magic, one of your tag team commanders, you can just opt to put it back into the command zone instead. Now, I was listening to the old-timey episode of Commander Cast, and they kind of talked about how they had that before, where, like, generals could opt to go to the general zone instead of going anywhere else, and that kind of, like, set the seed in my mind, I guess. So I think it might be too much of a radical change to do that, but I kind of like the idea anyways when it comes to Tuck. You know, we've kind of discussed that a little too, actually in episode one as well. So I think that would be the best way off the top of my head to fix it. What do you think, Christian?
Well, you know, I'm all afraid of change, and I don't want to see anything like this, and I think someone will abuse it. I think I would be a little more draconian in my decision if I were to come down on it. I would think if my commander gets mind controlled, I better be packing some ding dang removal to blow my own guy up if I want to bring my other guy out. I want something back in the command zone if I'm going to be bringing something else out. But I guess if any change like you had mentioned could ding dong him back into the command zone. What's with my de-alliteration right now? I'd be fine with that. But I think if somebody just, like, mind controls your dude and he's over there, I don't want to be able to bring my other dude in. I just think it could lead to some asinine interactions.
Well, see, the thing is that when I was playing around with the tag team thing, I actually went by that particular thing. Like, Ashling was still on the board, so I kind of just counted it. It couldn't come in because Ashling technically was still out. But then I realized, like, by doing that, it's like, Jack basically got to a point where it's, like, almost just playing, like, what is that other format?
100-card singleton?
Yeah, the 100-card singleton, where you basically was light commander with no commander.
I think that's because of all the tip-top enchantment removal Red has going on for it.
Yeah, and then that was the other issue. I was like, geez, it's like, if I can't find a way to just kill Ashling, then there's no way I'm ever going to get a chance to play another commander. I mean, in most games, like, yeah, like, if someone steals your commander, I can understand that, but this particular one's like, I still have a secondary option that I could be playing out.
Hey, man, he might be mind-controlled, but the ref's watching the partner. The right. Ref's watching the partner, so he can't come out while the other two guys beat up on the guy in the ring.
You know what, yeah, it actually did feel kind of like that. It felt like Ashling was, like, on the other side of the ring, and I'm sitting like, damn it, just reach far enough for me to tag you the fuck out and get someone and give in here. There's enough mountains on the field for him to make some decent, like, goblin tokens. We could do this. Reach, goddammit, reach! But no, Ashling just sat there in the corner getting a mud hole stomped in her.
Well, actually, if you're going to use an analogy, it's almost more like one of those swerve storylines where, you know, there's two tag teams fighting each other, but one of the members of the tag team, you know, switches sides and betrays their partner. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned the ref, because when I'm trying to think of the rules, I'm always kind of like thinking of that back in the mind. You're going to get disqualified here if the ref doesn't like what he sees. Now, when it comes actually to the topic at hand, though, I think the other way we could possibly do it is make it so you could play Ib from command zone when someone else has your Ashling. But if for some reason you do get the Ashling back, you'd have to they'd almost have like a legend rule together where they would both die and both go to command zone. So maybe that would be a way to do it where we almost like take the legendary planeswalker identity rule and make it so where if they're both on the board at the same time, they would kill each other in the same way that legends do.
I actually kind of like that idea then, because like just the idea of like Ashling just turned her back on me, and then now if I had to try to figure out how to play, I would still be able to get Ib out, so at least then I'd actually still would be, it's not like I'm completely out the game. I do still have a commander to use. It does occur, and I happen to get Ashling and Ib back on the same side of the field, and they both go back into the command zone. I think that would be a nice little way to fix that particular issue.
Yeah, and I was thinking that maybe you'd choose which one you would keep and stuff like that, but I think if we just, like, flat out make, like, the legend rule apply to the tag teams, I think that's kind of like the referee watching shit, you know?
Kind of a state-based action where if you have both commanders that you control on your side of the board, they just both go away.
Right, yeah. Or even if it's not both control, whereas someone steals your Ashling, you could play your Ib, and they kill each other and go back to your...
I feel like I don't like that as much, because that just makes mind-controlling the commander moot.
Yeah, fair. But mind-controlling a commander is kind of a douchebag thing to do.
It really is.
So, I don't know.
I think bribery should hit the command zone.
Let's tack another $10 onto that card, why not?
Yeah. Why not? I'd like to say that I don't actually believe that, to put that out there. So, we do have, we've got a lot of hammering out that we're going to be doing on this through, you know, it's going to take some time. And, of course, any suggestions are wonderfully accepted. Well, we'll at least look at them. And we won't call you dumb. We're not those guys. We don't call people dumb.
Well, don't speak for Calvin. Calvin hates
all of our listeners. That's true. Calvin hates everybody.
He hates our listeners with a passion.
Okay. So, me and Cassidy won't call you dumb. But Calvin has the spiked Morningstar ready to go the moment somebody sends us an email.
No, I don't. like, don't get me wrong. I might have an issue with, like, you know, being friendly. But in the same token, it's like I would never turn down any particular suggestions for like, you know, trying to help out or fix things.
Oh, man, now you're the badass with a heart of gold.
Well, it's not that I'm a badass with a heart of gold. It's like, you know, if I'm fucking up and someone's going to tell me I'm fucking up, I'd like to know that I'm fucking up so I can not fuck up.
Aw, he's changing. We're changing him.
Oh, no, you're not. Like, I will still like heed my words. I will still tell you to go fuck off if I think you're just, like, you know, trying to troll me. But other than that, like, you know, if it's, like, genuine, like, actual assistance that I could be like, oh, you know what, that actually makes sense. Yeah, I'm good for that.
Cool.
Make sure you know people, like, know where to stand on these particular situations.
Yeah, so basically to review real quick, you know, we decided that maybe either they should have a legendary state-based action going on, or possibly, you know, just everything in Tag Team Commander will send it back to the command zone. As Chris mentioned, definitely get back to us either at offcolorcast@gmail.com or, you know, at our .com specific. You know, that's exactly what I wanted to happen with this whole idea. You know, we discuss it, try it, come back and discuss it more, and I love the way it's coming across. We actually have some rules to it, sort of.
Okay, you wonderful people, we've made it to the end of episode 6 of Off Color, and it's time to say goodbye. This is Chris. You can get me on Twitter at Christian Renault, or just email offcolorcast@gmail.com. We all check it. The password is awesome, you won't get to hear it, but we all know it, so we'll all be reading them emails you guys send us, or checking the porn spam that I might have signed us up for. So Calvin, how about you say goodbye in your typical Calvin style?
Okay, everybody. Usually, right about now, I usually just tell you all the information that you already kind of should know by now. You know, 3toFace.com, CaptainRezzo@gmail.com. Catch me on Twitter. Catch me on Facebook. Facebook groups, things like that. I'm pretty much all over the place, and I'm pretty easily accessible. If you ever need to actually contact me, you know, you can contact me. But I'm going to take a quick moment here, and I'm going to just say, yes, I'm a pretty much a stats person. So, yeah, I'm looking at our stats, and I see that we have listeners from United States, Canada, Finland, the Ukraine, Russia, Singapore, Australia, the Netherlands, the United Kingdom, and Germany.
So we have 11 listeners?
Yeah, just about. But I know that all 11 of you listeners out there are actually listening and coming in and putting in time to hear us talk. So come on, hit us up. Email us. Something. I mean, you can't pretend like you're not listening. I know you're listening because I can see the numbers right here.
You can't now pretend like there's not something wrong.
Right. I mean, I know you want to tell me about how much I suck. I know you want to tell Cassidy about how awesome you think he is, and you're going to probably tell Christian he may need to start playing certain cards. Come on. I mean, please. I don't really understand why you're not doing this.
Oh, man, don't beg.
I mean, come on.
Like, no, it's like, I'm not trying to, like, sound like I'm begging. I just don't understand. Like, if you're out there listening, and you know that we want you to contact us, contact us.
Pretty sure Commander Cass had an email by episode 6.
Yeah, he told us he wants us to stop.
You can always tell when a magic podcast is getting somewhere when they stop reading every single email on the air.
Like, I'm looking at it right now. It says right here, from Andy to me, it says, "Dear Off Color Cass, you guys are horrible. Pack your shit, then leave."
Oh, that's the best email ever.
Okay, Cassidy, how about you say goodbye and warm your cockles?
Oh, I'm going to warm some cockles. This is Cassidy signing off. Again, you can always check me most weeks at tcgplayer.com. Writing articles on Thursdays. I also have a website, www.youcanthandlethenath.com. I actually don't post too much stuff in there because I've been working on this and article writing and stuff, but, come by. If you want to, there's lots of stuff in the old memories. I posted a lot of random shit. It'll give you plenty of stuff to read. Signing off, everyone. See you next week.
See you next week.